Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, are you listening to this podcast because you're a fan of old school wrestling? Back when Sting would wear the red, white, and blue, and Great Muta would spray and mist, Jim Crockett was ruling wrestling. Well, StarCast 4 is coming to Baltimore, and so are all those guys. And they're bringing their Hall of Fame friends with them. We've got Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Arn Anderson, Magnum TA, Ron Simmons. It is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to meet all of your favorites from the NWA and WCW, including the most rare photo op of all. Not the Great Muta in paint, but that's pretty rare. How about Sting in the red, white, and blue? That's right, the actual outfit he wore when he won the World Championship for the very first time at Great American Bash 1990. He'll have the stars and stripes on. And of course, the actual championship, what a photo op. But if you think that's cool, how about Jim Crockett? Yes, David Crockett will be there too, but we think this might be the first public appearance of Jim Crockett ever? Certainly in more than 15 years. You don't want to miss a minute of this. Of course, all the great stars from AEW are going to be there. Our own JR is going to sit down with Jon Moxley, and you don't want to miss that. Moxley's probably got a lot on his mind. Cody Rhodes, the Young Bucks, Jurassic Express, our main man Taz. You got to see all the stars coming to Baltimore for StarCast 4. Tickets are on sale now at StarCast.com. And don't forget, there's two R's in StarCast, StarCast.com. So mark your calendars now, November 7th through the 10th, Baltimore, Maryland, StarCast.com.
Welcome to Something to Wrestle With.
Something to Wrestle With.
Bruce Pritchard.
Bruce Pritchard.
Well, you know.
That's not a rib.
She pooted.
She pooted.
What a rib.
No, yeah, I'm a meat.
There's no box of gimmicks.
Rumor and innuendo.
I don't deal in rumor and innuendo.
And was he there?
I was there.
Say something about
mine. I don't give a shit.
I ain't scared of
shit. Fuck him.
Fuck you, Bruce.
I love
you.
Double cheeseburger.
You take the gravy.
Double cheese.
Well, you know.
And then double mayo.
They're on your Google machine.
God damn, kid.
God damn it.
What the hell show you got there?
I need more.
Ooh, yeah.
What say you?
Pronouns, pal.
And now, something to wrestle with. Con Bruce Pritchard.
Eek. The second most recognizable athlete in the entire world today.
Conrad Thompson.
What happened when?
What'd Vince say about that?
Well, hey Vince, tell me,
my shoulders look good tonight.
Yeah.
You're so big.
Yeah.
That's good.
Bullshit.
Welcome to WrestleMania.
World title now.
Welcome to Something to Wrestle
With.
Something
to Wrestle
With. Something to Wrestle With.
Something to Wrestle With.
Dig it.
Bruce Pritchard.
Hey, hey, it's Conrad Thompson, and you're listening to Something to Wrestle With. Bruce Pritchard. Bruce, what's going on, man? How are you?
Oh, not much. Been kind of quiet week.
I can't imagine.
My teeth came out. They keep coming out, Conrad. I got temps in, and I sent you a picture. But I sent you a picture with just one of them gone, but the two front teeth keep popping out at the most inopportune of times, too. And all I got is little metal pegs that are up there, and it's pretty annoying.
All I want for Christmas is my two front teeth.
I ain't waiting for Christmas, dog.
Hey, you know what's funny is you'd think after all that we've done together here on the show, you would know better than to go to Kane for your dental work.
Well, you know, it was Dr. I. Yankum, DDS, and the price was right.
You know what's funny is we are such assholes to each other in real life that when you send me this toothless selfie where you can tell you are not feeling good and hurting but you're in a bathroom mirror. I replied with, what the fuck? And then the next text was, you got the all new iPhone 11 and didn't tell me? Just completely no sell the tooth at all. I guess what I really want to know now that we're actually on the phone together is, how you liking that new iPhone, buddy?
It's okay. It's good, I think. What happened to me is I dropped it in Vegas talking to Senor Silva.
Oh, God.
So technically it's his fault. And since he now works for you, I say it's your fault. And it got progressively worse throughout the day. At first I had a green line on one side of the phone. Then from there it went to, I couldn't touch parts of the screen and it wouldn't work. And I had to go to Denver and spend 7 hours in a Denver mall at the Apple store. Not the best time management, if you will.
Well, you know,
time management. Special fresh.
I should tell everybody that we've got a maybe my favorite format that we do here on the show. We're going to do Ask Bruce Anything today. There were more than 1,000.
You already have. You asked me like 2 questions already. We're done.
We're almost done. Next week, though, we're doing something totally different. We're going to watch Halloween Havoc from 1998. It's one of the worst pay-per-views of all time. It's a rematch with the Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan. And we are basically going to be picking on WCW for 3 hours because this is the show where we've got Goldberg and DDP in the main event, and they would go off the air before the main event would finish airing. Just, man, if it could go wrong, it did. The following week, it'll be all about Fabulous Moolah, and then we'll do a watch along on November 8th. And this will be before Bruce was there. It's the Wrestling Classic from 1985. Get a little old school flavor going for us. And we'll round out the month of November with Survivor Series 99 on the 15th, Survivor Series 89 on the 22nd, and Survivor Series 94 on the 29th. So it'll be all about Survivor Series in November. But, you know, we can't do a show today without addressing the elephant in the room. One of our pals did not survive in WWE. Mr. Eric Bischoff is out. You have replaced him as the SmackDown czar. And of course, our Twitters collectively blew up. Do you want to release some sort of statement or speak to our audience? Just let them know what's going on.
I'll address it at the end of the show.
Sounds great. Let's keep it moving. And let's go ahead and get to great friend of the show, Bad Money Slim, who writes in, give us a horrible sex, drugs, and rock and roll story you've never told on the air. And you can change the names, or no names, in fact, to protect the innocent.
Wow. Oh boy. As far as funny goes, I one time, or more than one time, I had some friends that used to smoke in the rooms, and there got to be a point, you know, where for the most part, all hotels became smoke-free zones. You couldn't smoke cigarettes. You couldn't, you know, no smoking at all in the hotel. So if you were going to imbibe in the ganja, then you had to get creative as to how you did it. And that was the wet towels. That was the shower going with a lot of steam, and you spray your cologne to mask the odor, open up windows, whatever. And there were these two guys that had done this, and they always got together and would imbibe. And one of them got into town before the other and couldn't wait. And they were smoking in their room, and the fire alarm went off, and the entire hotel was evacuated. Not just one, I mean, the entire hotel was evacuated. And finally, at the end, you know, he was sitting down in the lobby.
Hang on,
and they
second.
Came up to him.
What time of
What's
day?
What's that?
What time of day is this when this evacuation happens?
About, I think, like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night.
Okay. So some folks are asleep and they're out of bed now, uncomfortable and discombobulated, wondering what the hell's going on.
In their jammies.
Yes.
And this one, you know, this one guy's sitting there, and they kind of noticed him And they walked up and they said, excuse me, are you in room 724? And he says, I'm not sure what my room number is. What's your name? I told him his name. And they said, well, yeah, you're in 724. Look, you can't smoke in the rooms because the fire alarm is directly in correlation with the fire department. And if anything goes off, we have to evacuate. And this is what has happened. So the fire marshal or the fireman came over and talked to him and so on and so forth. So now his buddy gets in the next night. They go to the room. He says, let's meet in your room. And they go to their room. They fire it up. And next thing you know, the fire alarm's going off. And he's like, oh, fuck. I forgot to tell you. So last night, he tells them the whole story. And they run out of the room and they go downstairs to evacuate. And they're sitting in the lobby and they're looking around going, nobody else is evacuating. Like, we're the only people sitting in the lobby. And the front desk comes up to them and says, excuse me, are you in room 726? And they're like, I don't really know what my room was. Just, yeah, we think you're in 726. This time, whatever they did, the fire people had come in and they had rewired or redone the alarm system so that it went to the hotel only first. Then it went to the fire department. If the hotel then had to do another step to call the fire department. So if something like that happened, the alarm only went off in the room where there was smoke. And they were busted good. And it was, that was a funny one. That was kind of like, made you go,
Totally unrelated. You can hear lots of fun old school stories right now from our great friend, Gerald Briscoe at FG Briscoe on Twitter. Every week right before Monday Night Raw, he's putting out stories by Briscoe and he's pretty excited about it and friend of the show. If you dig the content we're putting out for you here, you might even dig that. So check it out. Jay Ahola wants to
know. That was an awful coincidental plug.
Well, no, I just know that he tells old stories.
Oh, because we're buddies and we would travel together. I understand the correlation now. Okay.
Yeah, that's all. I mean, not saying anything. Jay wants to know, how would you have booked Hogan and Brett in 1993?
In 1993, I think that I would have loved to have turned Hulk heel. I would have loved to have turned Hulk heel and had him work an extended program with Brett, ending up with, I would have had Hogan take the championship from him in the middle of that, but I would have ended up with Brett and the title.
Let me ask, how would you have turned Hogan heel in 93? Like what would you have been able to do to make that loyal, faithful WWF audience that grew up with him literally turn their back on him?
I think that with you take the jealousy role and you be able to just amplify that a little bit and do nothing different than what we were doing. Because during the time the audience was booing Hulk, there was a segment of the audience that was already booing him. So just kind of flip the script and do similar to what we did with The Rock. You bring him in and you put him against the guy that is the champion that is becoming beloved, and just, it's a simple jealousy angle. And I think that one would have been the right way to turn him, at least in WWE, because it would have been a tough road. I'll say that, because there were pockets, man, that Hulk was the hero and nothing was going to change that.
No doubt. It would have been tough for me to get behind booing him, but you know, what could have been. Jay Stovall wants to know, before returning to WWE, you were involved backstage for MLW. What eventually led to cause you and MLW to part ways?
Oh, that's easy, by schedule, because we were doing more and more live events on the road, and MLW had gone from being a Thursday night TV taping to the weekends. And when they started running on Friday and Saturday for their TVs, I could no longer make those dates anymore because of the stuff that you and I were doing. And they coincided a lot for 3 months in a row. And I just thanked Court and said, hey, this was fun, but I've got to go do my own deal.
I'm pretty excited that they're going to be doing their pay-per-view debut next month. I think it's going down in Chicago. What are you looking forward to with MLW? I know you still keep up with some of that talent here or there. Anybody from MLW really impress you and stick out? I know once upon a time you were a big Matt Riddle fan, but Matt's now with NXT, and I think he used to be a Tom Lawler fan.
I still am a Tom Lawler fan, and I think that Tom is kind of that shining star there to me. I think that Tom has that innate it factor that they just need to bring out a little bit more. And if you let Tom be Tom, I think he could be a player at some point for him. And look, MLW is a place where a lot of talent that is not scooped up by all the other guys, they can go out and they can shine and show their wares. Gino Medina coming in. You've heard me talk about Gino before. I think Gino is going to be a huge star for the future. So it's some place that guys can get noticed, get on the radar, and it's a great place to be.
It is. I mean, it's been a launching pad. It's the first place that I saw MJF. It's the first place that I saw Mance Warner. I've seen a lot of talent that is really getting over and making some waves now. I saw him for the first time at MLW. So if you're listening to this show and you haven't checked out anything from MLW, go out of your way to do so. They're on BN Sports. You can catch up with them a little bit right now on YouTube. They got a pay-per-view coming up next month. So be old school. Give them a shout. Check them out. Kurt Zamora wants to know, any good Mr. Kennedy stories? Do you think he has enough to do a full profile show on one day?
I don't think so. You know, Ken is a really talented guy, but Ken, in a lot of respects, for whatever reason, and some people can get snake bit like this, that as soon as he tasted a little success, unfortunately, he would either get injured or something would happen, whether it be behind the scenes or in the ring, whatever it is, that would prevent him from getting to that next step. That happened in WWE. It happened in TNA. And while I think that Ken is one of those guys that can deliver, he can deliver in the ring and he can deliver in his promos, Ken always doubted himself a lot of times. And I think that maybe it was that tiny bit of insecurity that may have been the one thing holding him back.
I just recently read a little bit about Ken, and I read about it in a place that I never expected to, but I want to give it a plug now. Life is Short and So Am I. It's the new book from our pal Dylan, the former Hornswoggle. Go out of your way to check it up. It's a short read. But Ross Owen Williams, who has been a big player in professional wrestling memoirs for a long time, collaborated with Dylan. They did a phenomenal job on this. You can pick it up on Amazon. The name again, Life is Short and So Am I, My Life Inside, Outside, and Under the Wrestling Ring. Did Dylan send you a copy of that book? Have you checked it out yet?
No, little bastard.
I'll get you a copy. I got you.
I know you. I want it autographed. They cost extra.
Does he do that? I didn't know if
they got those, you know, like the pencils you get at the, for the
little people store.
No, when you play mini golf.
Oh,
they have those. He can sign it.
Boy, we should just roll credits. We're not beating that. Dave Buchanan was tonight.
How do you think he wrote the book?
Shorthand.
Okay.
Dave Buchanan was to know, how come at SummerSlam 90, the tag team partner on the outside stood at the opposite ring post we're used to seeing? And he included a picture here that I know you're not looking at, but it is interesting because usually we would have, you know, one team bottom right and the other team top left. For whatever reason here, we've got a team top left or bottom left and top right. So it's the exact opposite of what you would normally see. So it does feel like a production note, like, God damn, we've got to switch it up. Try something new.
I have no fucking idea.
I know, but if I don't ask you those questions, then people think that we're avoiding them. Mayhem wants to know, can you talk about Jim Johnston, how WWE met him? Did he have any other outside roles beyond music? What was your favorite theme he's done? Is he low-key one of the most important guys in the history of WWE? And most importantly, who has been his replacement?
Well, Jim, extremely talented guy. When I first met Jim, he had been with the company for a while, and his studio was in the basement of a church in Greenwich, Connecticut. Jim did all the music for WWE, whether it be the opens or the talent theme music, what have you. But Jim was an unsung hero that, see what I did there, unsung, because he did music, he didn't sing. As far as creating the soundtrack for so much of what we did. And Jim eventually moved from the basement of the church into the new studio and had a big, beautiful music studio there. I couldn't tell you. I think that there's just a lot of different people that do a lot of, that contribute a lot on the music side of things after Jim left. And I don't really know, but there's a lot of different avenues that they get music from.
It's amazing to me that this was, you know, he was such a big part of the company for so long and now he's out there. I mean, I think it was announced not too terribly long ago that he's doing theme music or he did some song for Impact, I think. And I don't know, just caught me off guard. You just assume that Jim Johnston is a lifer. Mike wants to know, on the In Your House Grand Zero, easy for me to say, on the In Your House Ground Zero episode, Bruce Pritchard references Jerry Jarrett smoking weed with Al Gore. Is this a true story? And whether true or not, what would that have sounded like?
No, I don't know. I know that Al Gore and the Jarretts were acquaintances, but no, I didn't say they smoked dope. And if I did, I was kidding.
Calm down.
God,
Barbara
damn.
Bush dope. He said marijuana. He didn't say heroin. Josh.
Well, I know, but I don't think I said that. I may have just jokingly said that.
Well, you know,
Al, pass the reefer over here. How you roll it. Well, first, what you do, you take the, the paper, and you put it you take and you hold, and then you crumble up, the ganja, and and then you sprinkle and roll and lick.
Hey, so since you're back now, spending a lot of time with Vince, have you broken out the old Jerry Jarrett impression since you've been back, and did he recognize it right away?
Everybody recognizes it. I do it more with Jeff than anybody.
I don't know why that's funny, but it is. Oh my gosh. You guys are terrible.
Want me to feel at home.
Well, you ever eat any crackers with, never mind. Mike writes in, who does Bruce Pritchard consider to be the greatest heel of all time? Who was the best at getting heat from the crowd? And does Bruce think it's harder to be a true heel these days with the way the business has changed?
Well, it's definitely harder to be a heel these days. That goes without saying, because I'm not sure that there are a lot of talents out there that truly want to be hated. I think that the business has changed, that guys want to be stars and be famous, but they don't really want to be hated. And that's a true art of modern time. I think that JBL accomplished that, hated in all walks of life. But I think of all time, when you go back and you look at heels that could always go out and get heat, there were, people like Ivan Koloff, who no matter where Koloff went, Koloff was able to maintain his heat. The Sheik was someone who was feared legitimately all over the world, and the audience was genuinely afraid of him. So that, that's where you find a great heel, someone where the audience is afraid and they're not really quite sure. Gino Hernandez was a great heel because he loved to be hated. He was able to tap into that inner button within everyone that just puts him over the edge.
you know, I know that you probably haven't seen much of his recent stuff, but you worked with MJF.
Genos?
No.
Oh.
You worked with MJF at MLW. I get the impression that either he wants to be a real heel or he's just a real asshole in real life.
Well, I hope he wants to be a real heel. I don't really know, but it's the difference between being one and playing the part.
Josh Kuhn writes in, now that Bruce is back,
he's not related to that other Kuhn, is he?
No, this is with a C, not a K.
Oh, thank God.
Now that he's back, is Pritchard pushing for Virgil to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame this year?
Virgil was already inducted.
Not Dusty.
Oh, hang on, baby. I thought you was talking about Virgil. Oh, you're talking about Virgil.
I'm talking about fuck money. I'm talking about meat sauce. I'm talking about Olive Garden's finest. Mike Jones. Who?
The fuck does that mean?
I said Mike Jones. And then I said the word who.
Shit. I'm walking, Conrad. I'm walking. This is dangerous in my hotel room. I'm walking and I'm stepping over wires to close the window and I'm about killing myself. You never know. Never say never. Because I think that when you look back and look at the whole presentation of the Million Dollar Man, you look back in that heyday of the business, I think that Virgil was a big part of that because he was always there, you know, holding the money, doing whatever it is that the Million Dollar Man needed him to do. So that could happen.
I'm not mad at it. Josh also wants to know, can Bruce tell us anything about the plan Duke the Dumpster Drosse heel turn in 95, where he would join the Million Dollar Corporation, but then it was seemingly abruptly dropped.
It's just Duke, man, Mike Drosse was just such a nice guy that it was hard not to like him. And unfortunately, when he tried the heel turn and Million Dollar Man was going to clean him up, and instead of being a garbage guy, he'd be a sanitation guy, you know, little tweaks. It didn't come across true. And it came across like he was really trying to play a role and didn't feel genuine. It didn't feel like a real sanitation worker. He was more garbage man.
JDR wants to know, as long as you've been with WWE, what was your favorite era to work in and why?
I would have to say, I loved the late 80s, early 90s, really early, during that really hot period and what have you. Then, from there, I think that, you know, Attitude Era for the money, that was great. But as far as being left with a clean slate and having a lot of your top guys leave the early 2000s, you know, from 2000 till about 2006 those were some fun years because you were building new talent, creating new stars.
Brother Jack writes in, we've all heard how painful it could be to work with Shawn Michaels backstage and how no one liked the Ultimate Warrior. Who was the easiest person to work with?
Ted DiBiase was super easy. Teddy was great because Ted was such a pro and he could get anybody and everybody over. So Tito Santana was a joy to work with. People like that. You know, Wahoo McDaniel was pretty easy to work with. Tough, but he was easy to work with if you were very clear with him and knew what the hell you wanted, man. But those guys kind of sit at the top of the list for me. Undertaker. But the easygoing guys in real life are usually the easiest ones to work with.
Mike Whitaker wants to know, do you think we could ever see Lex Luger in the Hall of Fame?
Yes. I think Lex Luger will be in the Hall of Fame.
I agree. We got lots of questions like this. I guess we should just attack it now. I don't know why everyone asked this, no matter what happens. But Mark Buffalo wants to know, Bruce, is this your last podcast?
Today?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, because anytime you get a promotion.
The answer is no.
I know.
God damn,
I know. It's just, you're on the network? Well, the show's over. Oh, you're with MLW? The show's over. Oh my God, he's with Impact? The show's over. Oh, he's back with WWE? The show's over. Oh, we got a promotion? The show's over. The show's not over, guys. Noon Fridays. Come on. Chris Herman wants to know, who was involved in bringing Vicky Guerrero to TV and appearing as a character? Did she approach WWE or did WWE approach her?
Vicky and I sat in Phoenix, Arizona in what was known as the TV office room. And we were talking. This was the first TV we were in Phoenix after Eddie's passing. And it had been a while. Vicky came down to say hello and just be around the business. And we started joking about what if, you know, oh my God, could you see Vicky coming back? And could you see her managing Ray only to turn on him? And just this whole crazy things you would never do. And as we're talking, I said, let me ask you a question. Would you actually do that? I mean, we're laughing about it, but it sounds really good. Would you actually do that? She says, hell yeah. And Vince's office was like right around the corner, and there was two hallways, and he was going down the back hallway, I think, to go to catering or something. And I grabbed him and said, hey, come here. I want to throw something at you. Saw Vicky and they hugged and just started reminiscing. I said, we talked about some crazy shit in here just a minute ago. I just want to throw this out at you because I think it would be good. And we threw out the idea of using her as a character, as a heel character. And we just got to talking about crazy scenarios. Oh my God, what if you did that? What if you fell in love with someone and all this other crap? And the rest, as they say, is history, because she embraced it. It was, I don't know if it, in the beginning it was a, well, you know, here's the widow of Eddie Guerrero. Let's do something for her. Mm-hmm. There may have been a tinge of that in there, but man, she delivered. God, she delivered. And it was,
is she one of the biggest surprises, you think, in wrestling history? Like, you got to think some of that mentality of, well, you know, she's the widow of one of our most beloved. We should take care of her. But who would have ever guessed she would be as damn good as she was at it?
Yeah, she wasn't good. She was great. And she was a huge surprise. And you're going to laugh at this, but when you say people that you didn't think would get, I never thought I'd get over.
Right.
With the Brother Love thing. I wanted to do it badly, but it was more of a, I wanted to be an interviewer with a personality. And I never in a million years dreamed that would get over to the level that it did.
Well, it got over. You know, it's remarkable that sometimes happens where you least expect it. Chris has another good question here. Why did Sunday Night Heat fade away? I always thought Sunday was a great night for wrestling, especially when football season was over, and I enjoyed it being a lead in for the pay-per-view days.
Well, you know, who's this, Chris?
Yep.
Well, Chris, sometimes it's better to burn out than fade away, but, it was difficult and was becoming expensive to produce because it was eating into the production time on the day that we were doing live television. And there wasn't that big of an audience. So we looked at how we could utilize that time and that production in other ways. And Sunday Night Heat lost out. But I see what you're saying. It was a great lead-in because people could go and get into the habit every Sunday of watching Sunday Night Heat, forget about the pay-per-view, but then we can remind them the very last, you know, the last few hours before we go into the pay-per-view. So it was a good vehicle, but it just, kind of lost its place in the rotation.
Pretty fun question here that I don't think I've ever heard before. Mike Whitaker writes, if Eric would have sent the NWO to a Monday Night Raw, like DX was sent to a Nitro, would you have let them in?
Probably not.
I I mean, that's got to be the answer. I know it's easy to say, oh, I would have let him in. But then when you really think about it on the other way, fuck that.
Yeah, we probably would have had him arrested or something.
That checks out. Dan wants to know, Bruce, as far as you know, is there any such thing as safe steroid usage?
Yes. As far as I know, and again, I'm no expert on the subject by any stretch of the imagination. If you saw me without my shirt, you would understand. And trust me, I will never do that to anyone. But under a doctor's supervision, steroids were used to rehabilitate and help muscle rebuild faster. That's what it's used for. And I think that under a doctor's supervision, for what it was used for, to help rehabilitate and repair muscle damage, yeah, I think that steroids have a purpose, and used under a doctor's supervision are perfectly safe.
All right. Dr. John Taylor wants you to put your booking hat on. I'm going to edit the question a little
bit. Somebody should have asked Dr. John Taylor about the goddamn steroids then.
Bruce, Hell in a Cell triple threat, Dodger versus Ginger versus Toby for the official dog of Something to Wrestle championship. Tell us the creative.
Okay. Well, first of all, Dodger would fuck Toby up. All right.
Toby, by the way, is Dave Silva's dog. For those of you who don't know, he posts about his mangy, stupid dog that pissed and shit all over my house for 3 days. I mean, I need a Sarah McLaughlin song for that dog stat.
Yeah. Yeah. Toby's a little asshole.
Yeah.
But Dodger would fuck him up. Dodger would fuck him up and he'd be out in the first 30 seconds. And then Dodger would have his way with Ginger, and she would proclaim Dodger the champion and the official Something to Wrestle With Bruce Prichard dog of the world. And the rest is history. But he'd have his way with Ginger.
I don't like what you're saying there.
I'm just saying she would fall in love with Dodge.
Is there a character or gimmick match that you created that never made it to TV that you wish did?
Well, I didn't create it, but I tell you one that I wish would make WWE TV is a two ring battle royal. Not only just the two ring battle royal, the way that we used to do it in Houston, but the two ring six man tag team match, which is always a favorite of mine. You have two teams of three and you have a match going on in each ring, and the third man is in between the rings and can tag into either ring and participate in either match. So I just always loved the two ring gimmick, and it's difficult in today's era because it takes up so much floor space and you lose good seating, and then you got to shoot a second ring all night, and it's distracting, what have you. But I think it's distracting in a good way. It's distracting in a talking point way that you can talk about all night long and sell the idea of two rings. The other thing about it is that the rest of the matches, they can't use both rings. They can't go back and forth because that kills the matches that do use both rings.
I got you.
So that's one that I wish could make its way. Never was a big fan of things on a pole. But, growing up in Texas, you always had the Texas death matches and Russian chain matches and Indian strap match. Everything had to have an ethnicity apparently attached to it. You know, Russian chain match, Indian strap match, Texas death match. Well, that's an area, but you know.
What about, you said you weren't a fan of things on a pole, but I mean, Heartbreakers.
Good point.
Mike wants to know, when you finally get inducted into the Hall of Fame, who would you like to introduce you?
That will never happen, but, I'd love for my brother to either induct me or Jerry Briscoe.
There you go. Jordan Eubanks wants to know, how in the world did Kevin Federline get involved with John Cena?
Kevin Federline, man, what a...
Some of you don't know, Kevin Federline was once upon a time married to one of the biggest stars in the world at the time, Britney Spears. And he became... a bit of a cult figure in the tabloid TMZ.com era. And then magically one day he finds his way on TV wrestling on Raw.
Yeah. And Kevin Federline was probably one of the celebrities that I had the most fun with because he was so cool, so happy to be there, such a big fan. And there was a little, there was probably a lot of fear in him because he knew he was out of his league and out of his element, but he was such a big fan. He was so happy to be there. And I walked into dealing with Kevin ready to hate him because he came across like a real arrogant dick the way that he was portrayed in the media. All the stories about him and Brittany. And when he first came with us, he was still married to Brittany. And then midway through, I think they got divorced and what have you. But I found Kevin, man, he was on time. He did everything he was asked to do. And you said, Kevin, I need you to be here at such and such a time and do this. Yes, sir. And he did it. He nailed it. So contrary probably to popular belief, he was really a super, super fucking guy to work with.
BCNDC, Intercontinental Tag Titles, what was the plan?
I don't know. Well, I don't even know what the fuck you're talking about.
Once upon a time, there was a rumor that you guys were considering Intercontinental Tag Champions, sort of like the NWA had World Tag Champ and then a US Tag Champ.
Well, it may have just been a rumor that never made it to anybody seriously.
Here's something you'll have fun with. Has Bruce listened to any of Conrad's other podcasts? And if so, could he rank them in order from best to worst? This gives you a chance to shit on all of our mutual friends.
Okay, well, let's rank them. There's Something to Wrestle With, Bruce Pritchard, that I find highly entertaining and very good. And it's number one.
Sure. Everybody knows that.
And then what else do you do?
Oh God. I do Grill and JR.
Yeah, that's how I rate them. Okay.
You like Eric Bischoff's podcast, 83 weeks,
83 weeks, Eric Bischoff. That's about it.
Not a big,
you want the honest answer?
You've never listened to any of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I knew that.
Conrad, I'm a little busy sometimes.
I'm not upset, dude. You have 1.5 hours free per week and you block that off for Something to Wrestle. So,
I get to talk to you for that 1.5 hours.
Yeah. So why would we be spending our time together listening to my other shows?
Yeah. That's the way everyone feels.
Jason wants to know, and I know you don't like to talk about current stuff, but this is a good question. I think you'll have fun with. What is something that you weren't expecting, good or bad, since you've been back to WWE?
The Sonic Ice Maker in the little coffee area. You know what? Do you have Sonic?
We do have Sonic, but there's probably,
you know, Sonic Ice.
There's probably pockets of folks listening who don't know what we're talking about. It's like the small little cylinders of ice, not the bigger pieces, but the tiny, more crunchy ice. There's a lot of like fast food hamburger joints here in America where they just sell bags of this ice. Yes, they still sell hamburgers and they sell milkshakes and tater tots and hot dogs and whatever the hell. But people will just straight up buy the ice, and it's commonly referred to as Sonic Ice. And, you can actually get some of those ice makers like for your home, but they're like $6,000 or $7,000. So people instead just run down to the hamburger joint and pay $1 for a giant bag of frozen water in the shape of these little cylinders.
Well, we've got this little thing in the coffee area, and it's water, purified water and ice. And it's small. But you hit the button, you know, and you get the ice, and it's like the Sonic Ice, and I love it. So I'm looking at it, I go, I wonder how much ice is actually in there. And so I kept filling up cups of ice, knowing that I had more cups of ice than could ever possibly. I don't know how it works, but I love it. So that's like my favorite thing.
I don't know what it says about you that in your free 3 minutes, you decide, let's go fill up as many cups of ice as we can. You're an adult child, and we love you for it. John Riggle wants to know.
Trust me, you would do the same
thing. Where would you put WrestleMania 19 in your all-time favorite WrestleMania? It is my number one.
Well, my number one is WrestleMania 17, as we've discussed. And I think that 19 was great. It really was. It was great, but not as good. Not as good as 17. So probably in the top 10.
Two fun questions here. Seinfeld or Friends?
Oh, Seinfeld. Scorpion all day long, twice on Sunday.
Scorpion King or the Marine?
Scorpion King. That's the one where he became Scorpion King, right?
No, you're thinking of The Mummy was like his debut, or Mummy Returns or whatever, but Scorpion King.
Yeah, Scorpion King tells the backstory.
Yeah, it's like his coming out. It's his movie.
The Marine was a better movie.
I somehow knew you were going to say that. Mick has an interesting question, one that I don't think we've ever talked about. What's the process for training new referees in the modern era? Are they trained in house, or does WWE usually go for readily experienced ones?
No, they're all trained. They're all trained, go through the PC and get trained. It's good if you've already refereed before though.
Oh yeah, for sure. Do you know if there's somebody, we hear William Regal scouting this guy or that guy or whatever. I mean, are they also looking for referees, or is that a different skill set?
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, whenever I watch a show, I look at everybody and I'm always looking for whether it's a ring announcer or a referee or just somebody hustling backstage to make things happen. Talent is talent. So there's a female referee that works down at Booker's, and she so badly wants to be a wrestler, but I think that she is a great referee, and I'd like to see her try to continue doing just that, because she's really good at her job. So everywhere you go, yeah, I think you're looking at everybody involved as talent and trying to find the best talent to come in and work.
Friend of the show, Mance Warner, wants to know, why did Power and Glory's push stop out of the blue, and were they ever in consideration for the tag titles?
Well, as far as their push, I don't know that anybody would consider it a push. You know, they were a tag team, and I thought they complemented each other tremendously, because Herc was the big monster and Paul could fly and work, but I don't. For whatever reason, they just didn't get over. Maybe because they looked at Herc as a former single guy, now with Paul, who had always been a tag team guy. I don't know. I don't know if they just felt it was retreads. But when you go back and you watch some of their stuff, they complemented each other well, which to me makes a great tag team. But they didn't really click with the audience. It's about the only thing I can think of.
I don't know why this one is fun for me, but Joe Lawson writes in, where at Titan Towers is the vault where the band material is stored? It's so funny to me that there's this perception that there's this group of this collection of DVDs or master tapes or whatever it may be. This stuff can never see the light of day. So it's in like a safe or under a little lock and key under Vince's desk or something. And we know that's not real.
Well, that's what we call it's. There's another name for it. It's called the best of brother love.
Never let anybody see any of this.
And that's in my office. But yeah, that's funny. And there is no more tape, folks. Everything's digital.
I think a lot of people want to know the statute of limitations here. We got this question 100 different ways. Here's one of them. Andrew Campbell wants to know, when is Hell in a Cell 2019 finally going to be on a poll?
Let me think. I'll be 65. That would be 229. Give me a couple years. 2034.
Oh, that's not that bad.
Yeah.
Be there before you know it. So there you go. Everybody wants to know, when are you going to talk about Hell in a Cell? 2034, buddy. Put it on your calendars right now. We'll do it on the anniversary.
Let's get more specific, Conrad. October.
Yeah. On the exact anniversary. That's what we do, baby.
Yeah. Put on your calendars, folks.
Levi Betts wants to know, did Vince ever talk about starting his own MMA company?
We actually had been in talks with Bob Meyerowitz, who owned the UFC, and Campbell McLaren and those guys, to purchase UFC before the Fertittas came in. So, yeah. But he was looking to actually purchase what was the UFC at the time, which was a no holds barred, a lot different than it is today. And now they have rules and different things, but it was a completely different animal back in the day. And we had talked to them about purchasing them and taking over that company. Then the Fertittas came in and they just offered too much money.
Well, and if you're thinking you're spending too much money on high interest rate credit card bills and it's adding to your stress, we have got a solution for you. Pay off your credit card balances and save yourself some money with a credit card consolidation loan from our friends at Lightstream.com. With Lightstream, you can get a rate as low as 5.95% APR with auto pay. That's much lower than the national average interest rate of over 20% APR. Plus, your rate is fixed. How about that? You get a fixed rate. So as rates continues to rise, your low rate won't budge. The online application, well, that's quick and easy. You can apply right from your phone, and you can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. And I've told the story a ton here on the show, but I used Lightstream myself back in 2014, I think. And maybe that's right. Either way, years ago, they were so far ahead of the curve. I got the best interest rate I ever had on a car. I did it online. They overnighted me a check the very next day. So I was able to go shop like a cash buyer. I got the best deal on a car I ever had. I got the best interest rate on a car I ever had. And I know you've had a similar experience with Lightstream, right, Bruce?
Absolutely. And it helped my daughter get the loan for her car. But the part I like about it the most, it's simple. It's so simple, even I can do it. So if I can do it, I know you can do it. And all you got to do is go to their website and check them out, and they walk you through everything. Absolutely amazing.
Just for our listeners right now, you can apply and get an additional special interest rate discount. Now, the only way to get the discount is to go to lightstream.com/wrestle. That's lightstream.com/wrestle. This is subject to credit approval. The rate is going to include a 0.5% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. So what are you waiting for? Visit lightstream.com/wrestle. For more information, that's lightstream.com/wrestle. I can't recommend it enough. You know, if I'm endorsing another financial product on my own podcast, I believe in it. This is a good one. J Dog writes in, any Marissa Mazzola McMahon stories? You've mentioned Shane's family before, but never his wife by name. And most of us fans remember her from the Livewire era. What can you tell us about Marissa?
Just absolutely one of the sweetest individuals I've ever had the pleasure of knowing in my life. Class all the way, beautiful, and just perfect. I mean, she really is from the standpoint of she's a great chef. She's just pleasant human being to be around and a wonderful mother. I mean, I can't think of anyone or anything that could ever remotely find anything not wonderful to say about Maris.
Hogan's Thermos asked a few fun questions here. One of them is, has Bruce
it talks?
I know, right? Has Bruce seen NWA Power yet? And if so, what are his thoughts on the return to studio wrestling in 2019?
Well, if you like studio wrestling, there's studio wrestling.
I take it, you know, since you didn't really grow up on studio wrestling, you're not a big fan of studio wrestling?
I personally am not because I grew up watching Friday night. You had the matches at the Coliseum. Saturday it was on TV. So it was a big arena feel all the time. And I've never produced studio wrestling. I've never, I've done stuff at Channel 5 in Memphis, but that's about the only studio wrestling I'd ever been involved with. And it just always was a way for a promotion to be able to produce their product inexpensively in a studio where they had their television. So it was a mainstay in the South, all over, from Georgia to Florida, Tennessee, a lot of places. Vern had studio wrestling in Milwaukee, or Minnesota, wherever the fuck it was. And it was a mainstay. But when you come from where I came from, the shows were all, you know, arena shows. And it just felt bigger than with the studio wrestling. But if you like studio wrestling, man, there's studio wrestling.
We've all heard stories about how Nikita Koloff would stay in character off camera. Any other examples of guys never breaking character, even amongst the boys?
Well, Nikita broke it amongst the boys. Boogeyman pretty much stays in character. Back in the day, Moskris never took his mask off. You know what else he never did?
No, yeah.
But there were a lot of talents, man, that just back in the day.
By the way, let me just tell you, we've got some dicks who listen to this show. I don't know how much time you spent on social media this week, but poor Eric Bischoff got fucking bombarded with our No Yob shirt, which is available right now at brucepritchard.com. And you should definitely pick one up, but
as well as dude, I used to be over and, pronouns pile. Goddamn.
Well, I don't know why that was just too much for me. The Black Dave Meltzer writes, when Bruce was a Ute, what wrestlers were in his top five?
Wahoo McDaniel, Johnny Valentine, Jose Lothario, Boris Malenko.
Not Terry Funk.
Well, the Funks were number one. So there you go. That's five.
Wait. You can't say the Funks. No.
There's Dory, Terry, and Dory Sr.
Well, that's three, and you already had group. Four. Okay.
So you want to, then the Funks, Wahoo, and Johnny Valentine.
Sorry, Boris. Jeff Whitaker wants to know, who would you put on your Mount Rushmore of promoters? So we know Bosch is on it. We know McMahon's on it. You got two other spots.
Promoters.
Dixie?
No. Dixie wasn't a promoter.
Oh, sorry.
By any stretch of the imagination.
Jerry Jarrett?
Nope. Eddie Graham?
Okay.
I'll put Bill Watts on there.
So Bill Watts, Eddie Graham, Paul Bosch, Vince McMahon, that's your set.
Yeah.
Where's Jim Crockett fall?
I don't think Jim was a promoter either.
Well, hey, asshole, I was trying to get a free plug in because I can't believe that I did this. I don't know that you saw, but I found Jim Crockett and he's coming to StarCast 4 in Baltimore. It's his first public appearance ever. Nobody's heard from the dude in decades, but I found him. How about that?
How'd you find him?
Lost Promoters Are Us.
Yeah.
So he was a promoter, cause I found him in there on the shelf. He was way in the back. I had to dust him off, but he's going to come down
behind the ice cream,
not just for photo ops. No, it was behind the Sonic ice.
Okay.
And, that's it. We've had him cryogenically frozen all these years and we're bringing him back to life. We're starting a rival promotion. It's going to be great. Maybe you've seen it. It's Studio Wrestling. It comes on YouTube on Tuesday, 6:05. Yeah. Either way, Jim Crockett, man, come on. He's going to do a panel and talk about Jim Crockett promotions, the good, the bad, and the ugly. That's going to be good stuff at StarCast in Baltimore next month.
Huh?
Thanks for helping me put
I'll be on broadcast TV tonight on the Fox network.
Yeah. Hey, motherfucker.
Don't need cable. Don't need any of that. It's called Friday Night SmackDown.
I push your shit every week and I ask for one little plug and you're like, nah, Fox.
Well, you wanted me to put Jim Crockett over. That ain't going to happen.
Well, you could put over that I found him. God damn it.
That's a miracle.
Thank you. Just saying.
It's a miracle.
What is Bruce's favorite gimmick match of all time?
Not big on the gimmick matches, as crazy as that sounds. I used to love as a kid either the chain matches, a Russian chain match, or a strap match.
An Indian strap match. You got to have those ethnicities. We're going to do that from now on. I think from now on, whenever you guys have gimmick matches on TV, like you should just try in a creative meeting, just suggest that you put a nationality in front. Just see how it goes.
All right.
I mean, you had a Punjabi prison. I mean, we're halfway there, baby.
Yeah. Because that's what I grew up on. I grew up on, you know, cage matches and things like that. So that's what, to me, those were the mainstays. Those were the staples. So that's what was always my favorite.
Jamie wants to know, any good Ricky Steamboat stories? Was he ever considered for a WWF championship run after his successful run with the NWA strap?
I don't know if he was or not. You know, after Ricky had won the Intercontinental Championship at WrestleMania 3 and he wanted a lighter schedule and he left. But when he came back, my favorite Ricky Steamboat story is when we went to Florida to work with this guy named Brian LaPalme, who was the last fire breather that we could find that would teach us how to breathe fire. So Ricky and I went and we spent several days in, I think it was Fort Lauderdale, in this parking lot where the Great American Circus had their tent put up in a mall parking lot. And every day we would go and we would learn how to breathe fire. And the guy tells us, he says, it's real simple. This is all you do. And he was kind of showing off. Main thing you need to do is make sure, you know, hold it up and check the wind and make sure that you're never blowing into the wind because it can come back and catch your face on fire. And obviously that wouldn't be good. And the guy shows us, you know, he breathes fire one time and then he holds the thing up and he turns and he breathes a second time and it comes right back in his face and his face catches on fire. And Steamboat and I turn and look at each other and Ricky says, yeah, you can call Vince. We're not doing this. And he assured us that was a fluke. That never happens, man. That's never happened. I think just because you guys were here. So we talked Ricky off the roof and he did it. And I thought that was a pretty cool deal with the fire breathing shit, the fire breathing dragon. It was different.
Let me assure you, son, you are a salesman. When you go show a man, here's a professional and here's what you're going to do.
This is a guy that's going to teach you.
He lit his fucking face on fire.
Oh shit.
And you still sold it. It's amazing.
I did.
God damn it.
I did.
I'm so proud of you. Like if you were here right now, I'd hug you. Cause that's like the best Bruce sales story I've ever heard.
Oh, it was like, well, yeah, but you're outside, man. Let's go inside and show them. That can never happen inside.
Oh,
I was Rick. We control the wind indoors. And I would never ask you to do this outside, man. Come on.
Except, you know, if he was still around for WrestleMania 9, maybe.
Except unless.
Carl has an interesting question. Again, I know you don't like to talk about current stuff, but he wants to know, are you going to Crown Jewel? And if so, how do you prepare for a trip like that?
Laxatives? Oh, wait.
It's a brutal flight.
You pack a bag and you go.
I think what he's talking about is it's a brutal flight. A lot of people who listen to the show obviously have never been to that area of the world. They can't imagine, you know, what the process is like once you land to getting to the building and all of that stuff. The first time you did it, cause I know you've done it once before now, super stressful, better than you expected. What can you tell us?
Unfortunately, in my age these days, it's all the same. So we had a big charter flight and you get on, you go to sleep, you wake up, you get off the plane, you go through customs. And since it is a charter flight, we're not flying in with everybody else and go through a private part of the airport to go through your customs and immigration.
get on a bus, go to the hotel, get on a bus, go to the building, do the show, and turn around and come home. It's just another stop on the tour. Unfortunately, it's not that, it's no big deal. It's just another day on the tour.
Jeff writes in, without question, my favorite bit in the history of the show is Bruce doing the cornet voice and then cutting Conrad off yelling, motherfucker. I laugh every time. Do you guys have a favorite running bit on the show?
What are you talking about, motherfucker?
You mean you've never really talked
Fuck
about
you. That?
Do you have a favorite
motherfucker
bit on the show?
Dumbass.
What?
Do you have a favorite bit? I'm going to tell you, I really hope they're not listening right now, but I don't think you and I have laughed so goddamn hard as when we were doing those train commercials earlier this year.
Oh God.
I was trying to do a straight read and I couldn't keep it together. And we both laughed so hard that you peed a little. And then we had to take a bathroom break right in the middle of the show. And then I tried to, as soon as I got it together, put it back together to say, oh, and Ron Simmons was jumping off the train here, and we just lost it all over again. But I left that part in, and dude, I know it's a serious matter. And if anyone has lost a loved one to a train, we're not making fun of that. But the way I was trying to read the copy, it just tickled Bruce and I in a way where I don't think I've laughed that hard, maybe ever in my life.
Yeah. That was that Sonny Pooted. And there's been a few times we just get tickled, and folks, sometimes we do these very late at night, early morning.
Yeah. This is early morning today, but once upon a time in the last month or so, we did it at like 1 AM. So it's been some interesting recording times when we get a little punchy.
So sometimes we get a little punchy.
I think the funniest moment that I remember you and I working on the show when we weren't actually recording is when we were in my office and we were putting together the Jim Cornette show. And we had RG Taylor as a sponsor. So we had to figure out where we were going to put the mesothelioma spot in. And I said, when you're telling me about the George the Rat story, I said, what if we say that the rat died from, and you finished it, mesothelioma, and then just fell into the floor laughing and couldn't breathe. It's tremendous.
Poor George.
George the Rat needs to go into the Hall of Fame. I hope that happens.
He'll go into something to wrestle with Hall of Fame.
Absolutely. 100%. Let's keep it moving here. Mr. Perfect Fan Canadia says, back in the day, how aware are you of enhancement talent who will go on to become famous? For example, Jack Foley worked a match underneath against Hercules in 86 and several matches in 87. Were there times when you met someone and had to be reminded, hey, we've met before?
All the time. Yeah, all the time, because a lot of times it goes so fast and you don't realize, you meet so many people and everything moves so damn fast. You have no idea who the hell you're meeting. We went through something the other day, my wife and I, and there were all these people that we were meeting when we were close on the house. And there's this one, there's that one, there's this person. And we sit down and I go, okay, can we just sign the papers? Cause I don't remember one of y'all's names and I don't really care. So let's just go. It's the nature of the beast. And so many guys, you go back to Shawn Michaels when he first broke in, this kid that could, the Hardys, on down the line, Mick Foley, they've all been there. They've all done it. Had to start somewhere. So as far as looking at guys and seeing when they work, hey, that guy's going to be a star. If they're at that level, you think, okay, one day, very rarely are you going to get someone who is this extraordinary talent to be an enhancement talent. They will turn into it. Definitely. But they got to start somewhere. So yeah, it's a lot of times guys come up. Yeah, I worked with so-and-so. You were at Gorilla. Okay, cool.
Let's keep it moving here. Interesting question here. Can't wait to get your take. Chris Colley writes in, do you think WWE at this point has to be considered too big to fail?
no one's too big to fail. And I think that the company is, Jesus Christ, it's a monster and it's a huge machine that needs to be fed. And as long as it's fed, it will survive and thrive.
To explain that, back in the American economic crisis of 2008, a lot of the big banks were considered, quote, too big to fail. And of course, that resulted in a big bailout. And there was lots of controversy as a result. I know some of our European listeners may not be familiar with the phrase. Earl writes in, this is maybe the question of the show. What happened to Mark Henry and Mae Young's hand baby? Let me try it again. What happened to Mark Henry and Mae Young's hand baby? Did it grow up to be the Hamburger Helper or Arby's mascot asking for a friend?
Well, he came to one of the Raw reunion shows as a teenager. And well, he's grown into quite the hand.
He's a hell of a hand.
He is a hell of a hand. That was my next goddamn line. But you know, he's been stereotyped in that world and everything. And the Hamburger Helper guy, I mean, that hand, he's just an asshole.
I've heard that.
Yeah. So he wanted to do, they wanted to do like a cheesy Hamburger Helper, and he applied for that. And the Hamburger Helper guy just said, man, put a yellow glove on me. Fuck that guy. So it's a tough business, the hand business.
Earl, you are the man. I just sent you a message on Twitter to DM me. We have got to get you a shirt, my friend, because I'm stealing your hand, baby shit. Thank you. All right, guys, we got to run a timeout right now to tell you how to save some money. What are you waiting for? Go to savewithconrad.com. I'm talking to you. If you're a homeowner and you're in a 30-year loan, dude, it's not a matter of if I can save you money. It's a matter of how much. And right now is the best time ever to go ahead and do this. There's a lot of things going your way right now. All of a sudden, real estate is worth more than ever. Your house is worth more than what you bought it for. Secondly, interest rates are cheaper than when you bought your house. Interest rates on credit cards in America are hovering around 19%. What are you waiting for? Let's consolidate what little bit of credit card debt you've got. Let's put it into a new monthly payment where you get the benefit of the tax deduction, because the interest you pay on your house, you can write off. The interest you pay on your credit card, you cannot. Let's also get the best rate possible, way better than what you have right now. And oh yeah, how's this for starters? No house payments for 2 months. You won't make your November or your December payment. You're done until next year. And come next year, you're going to have a better mortgage. Most importantly, you're going to get out of debt faster. We are routinely helping podcast listeners take their 30-year loan and cut 6, 7, 8, 9 years off of their loan. What are you doing? Find out how much money you can save right now for free. You don't need perfect credit. You don't need money out of your pocket. And if we can't save you money, we won't waste your time. Check it out right now. Savewithconrad.com. We're licensed in over 40 states. Check it out. Savewithconrad.com. NMLS number 65084, equal housing lender. Ben Putman writes in, we've heard about certain wrestlers like Big Van Vader, Stan Hansen, Rob Van Dam being sloppy and dangerous in the ring. And that means all of us fans are dying to know, how big was Batista's dick? Still thinking about it.
What's that?
You know, Batista or whatever. Is it just that dreamy? Like you, I mean, whenever I mention it, it's like you go into a trance. Was it, you have like a traumatic experience with it? Bob writes in, how come when a superstar is seen watching a match on a monitor backstage to scout their opponent, they're almost always standing up and watching the monitor at an angle?
How the fuck do you watch the monitor when you're scouting opponents?
I don't actually scout opponents. We don't have any here on the podcast.
There you go. So this is probably coming from someone that's never been back at the monitor scouting their opponent. It's how you do it.
It's a little peek behind the curtain, pal.
We get lots of questions about this. Let's just answer it here. J Dog wants to know, are there any plans for something else to wrestle coming back to the WWE network?
Never say never.
Any Jess McMahon stories that Vince has told you about?
No, you know, other than Jess being the pioneer in the boxing world, Jess McMahon, who was Vince McMahon's grandfather, was one of the first promoters in Madison Square Garden to promote boxing and later on wrestling. But I don't know that Vince was ever around him. I have no idea, but, no, there's not. Just you go back and look at the history. I tell you, you know, Madison Square Garden looks at Jess McMahon very fondly because of all the things that he did while promoting there. So it's, one of those names in the boxing world that is definitely revered.
Hey, let's talk about, this is a fun question we've never touched on before, as far as I know. Craig Olney writes in, did WWF ever try to get the Four Horsemen in the WWF? Now, the reason this is fascinating to me is because you've told the story that SummerSlam 88, you thought you had Ric Flair as the guest on the Brother Love Show. By SummerSlam 89, you've got Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard. Soon thereafter, Barry Windham would be there. And J.J. Dillon would eventually follow suit as well. So you're going to have the manager, the leader, the tag champs, the U.S. champ. You could have had the entire collection there had the Flair thing happened. Do you think if all of them would have been there, Vince would have put them together and called them the Horsemen? Or would he have not done that because it was done somewhere else and he couldn't own it?
I don't know, because I think if he had brought everyone over at the same time and done everything, he might have. He might have done the Four Horsemen. I don't know if the NWA or whoever it was at the time owned the Four Horsemen trademark, but I wouldn't have surprised me for him to do that. No.
Drew Landry writes in, it seems like Bret Hart had several great WWF matches. Do you have a favorite?
Bret Hart? God, the one you hate, WrestleMania 12, is one of my all time favorites, but,
overrated. 13 with Austin is incredible.
13 with Austin is incredible too. But you know, you look at so many where Bret would tell these great stories throughout the matches. It was, God, there's tons of them. Yes. But 13 with Austin, 12 with Shawn are the two that stick out. And the other one, the Survivor Series with Diesel, the one where he won with a small package.
That's where they went through a table, right?
Yeah. Yeah. To me, that was just absolutely phenomenal.
Vorzug Official wants to know, I need to know about your office situation. Do you have the same office you originally had? If not, who has that one now? Do you ever pull them aside and reminisce about the good old days in that old office?
God, there's so many people, and I had so many offices in that office. There's too many to count. So, an office is an office. No, I'm not in the same office. I'm not even on the same floor. So
Ringside Bria wants to know, if the Undertaker were to retire, who do you think, he would handpick to retire him? Or do you think someone should retire him? And I'm sure what he means is, for years and years, the quote unquote tradition in wrestling was you go out in your last match, you lose. And, you know, we saw Kurt Angle have his last match earlier this year and Baron Corbin beat him. And that's sort of always been the wrestling tradition. Who do you think Undertaker will pick when that time is finally here?
I don't know. But I don't think for me that anybody needs to retire the Undertaker. I think the Undertaker is the type of character that can live on forever. Now, he cringes every time I say that, but that's the way I feel. And I don't even want to have that discussion because I don't think that anybody needs to retire him and make him go away. I like leaving that door open. I like the mystique of the Undertaker, and feel that he's special enough that you just leave him alone.
Charlie Thrower writes in, recently the people from Viceland posted a video of Cornette pulling off a trick pool shot. Besides Corny, who else was an old school pool shark?
Gorilla Monsoon.
That makes sense.
Gorilla Monsoon was like Minnesota Fats. I mean, he was incredible.
Interesting question here from Mike. You're going to have fun with this. Who wins in a Houston street fight? Bruce Pritchard, Jim Ross, Arn Anderson, Eric Bischoff, or Tony Schiavone?
Conrad, I'm a three-time Black Belt Hall of Famer.
Segar wants to know, have you heard how Conrad behaves with Arn Anderson and Jim Ross? He treats them with respect and class. On your show, he cusses and screams at you and is about to show you a Hogan Warrior match next week. Are you not entertained enough in your 22 and a half hour work schedule to put up with this bullshit?
You treat them with respect?
Absolutely not.
Good.
In fairness, I'm not nearly as good of friends with either one of them as I am.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, you know,
our greetings to each other. We are just awful humans to each other by text.
Yes, message. We are. We're terrible. That's if anybody, see, here's the thing. If people didn't know us, they would swear we hate each other.
But that's the way we are with all of our friends. You've seen me with my other outside wrestling friends, and I've seen you with your other friends, and that's just our personality. We're busting balls 24/7. So it's not a gimmick here on the show.
No, it's definitely not. I mean, I never liked you.
Fun stuff.
Yeah. It's funny. Cause it's true.
Well, what else is true is that today's episode is brought to you by CBS Sports HQ. And here's the thing about this, and this is awesome. This is a brand new sports streaming news network. It's live 24/7 and it costs you nothing. I can't believe this is real. It's absolutely free. CBS Sports HQ coverage is always focused on the game. Tons of highlights, breaking news as it happens. Of course, your fantasy advice and gambling picks and analysis to help you get that extra edge. And when you turn on the CBS Sports HQ, you'll see the tips and trends you need to win your bets. And don't forget, you can get access to all this great coverage completely free. Now, we don't mean like free for a week or free for a month or free if you have some special cable package. We're talking about totally, completely free for everybody. Man, you don't even need a login. Just download the CBS Sports app on your phone, your Apple TV, Roku, Fire TV, or other connected device at any time to watch CBS Sports HQ. No fake debates, just real sports for real sports fans at the great price of completely free. You don't even have to log in or sign up for anything. Download the CBS Sports app and watch CBS Sports HQ today. And what's great about this, Bruce, I don't know that you've had a chance to tinker with it on your side. I didn't even like have to have a Wi-Fi connection and it still looked great on my phone. So if you're on the go, you're traveling like you are, you need to keep up. You got to check this out. It's the new CBS Sports HQ app. I know you don't like to talk about current stuff, but here's another one. Who on the current roster would have made a great manager back in the day?
I think Sami Zayn makes a great manager now, would have been even better back in the day.
We got lots of questions about Kamala this time, which I was a little shocked by. Charlie Castro writes in, a Kamala episode would be more interesting than a Taz one. Can you and will you guys ever do a Kamala episode? We did get a little bit of, I don't even know how much of this we want to talk about, but Vince Russo took great issue with our Taz episode last week, because I guess in the show, and I did go back and listen to it, you said that Vince Russo was in contact with Taz and they were sort of going around Jim Ross. And I don't know if Russo took issue with that, but that is definitely the version that you said and that Taz said. So that checks out. But I think you said something like JR was offended because it felt like Vince was sort of making side deals. And whenever those contract terms would come up, Russo would sort of throw the, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And then they had to sort of back end and figure out what are we going to do? And I think Taz would say he actually had the contract negotiation discussion face to face with Vince McMahon, not Vince Russo. Do you want to clear any of that up? Because Russo has decided this is a hill worth dying on this week about who discussed a contract with Taz 20 years ago.
Well, I know I didn't. And I know that Jim Ross was upset that it had taken place, that any contract negotiations had taken place initially without him being involved in it. And I have no idea what Vince Russo did or didn't do other than what I was told by Taz, who told me that Vince Russo made the initial contact. That's not coming from me guessing. That's coming from a discussion that I had with Taz. So if he wants to dispute that, then he can dispute that one with Taz. As far as Vince Russo negotiating contracts, no, Vince Russo never negotiated contracts. Did Vince Russo reach out to talent ahead of JR and ahead of us? Yeah, I believe he did. But quote is from Taz.
Well, the thing about the contract that I think Russo sort of stuck on is, and I heard the clip again this morning before we recorded, but you said whenever contract terms would be discussed with Russo on the talent side, I'm sure the talent through the course of this conversation, and I'm freestyling, I wasn't there, but I would imagine Russo being a creative type was like, bro, I've got great ideas. You could do this, you could do that, blah, blah, blah. And of course the talent, that's important, cash and creative, but they also probably want to talk about cash. So if it comes up, hey, do you think I could look at an X number a year deal for about this? I felt like based on the clip I heard from our show last week, cause I even had to re-listen to it to see what all the hoopla was about. You sort of said Russo would go, yeah, yeah, yeah. And my understanding of that is he was, not in a position.
He would avoid the question and there was nothing he could say.
So, but to your point in the clip last week, you said, and then when talent hears that, they think it's a done deal, but they don't realize that's not the guy you talk to about that. You talk to him about creative stuff, but he's not your contract guy.
True. He's not. Never was.
Well, I think Russo wants an apology because it was inferred that you said he negotiated Taz's contract and he didn't.
Well, if I inferred that he negotiated Taz's contract, that would be incorrect. I won't apologize for anything I said. And as far as how all of that was handled, was not initially done through talent relations. And that did upset JR at the time. JR eventually did end up doing that contract with Taz. And as far as someone being upset about it, sorry, you're upset. Bummer. But that's the way I remember it. That's how I remember it going down. Did he negotiate contracts? Nope. But I do know, you know, from a standpoint of if guys are talking about that, you're wanting to get out of it. It's going to be, yeah, we can do all that, but that's not my place. Go talk to whoever. Talent only hears what they want to hear a lot of times. And to that end, they hear what they want to hear.
Why do you think Russo is so upset right now?
I beg your pardon?
Why do you think Vince Russo is so upset with you right now?
I have zero idea. I don't read his stuff. I don't listen to his stuff. So I have no idea.
Well, it's unfortunate. I wish he would.
Yeah, you know, here's the other thing that is unfortunate is that sometimes people will take a clip, a bite out of context, not listen to the entire thing and or not report and or deliver the entire sentiment of things that are said and done on this show a lot of times. And people will take, oh, he said that? Oh, my God. And they'll take one little piece and get bent out of shape. Not many years ago, whenever it was, we had done a show on him and I asked him the question. I said, when he got upset about this, I said, did you listen to the show? No, but I was told. I said, okay, great. I was told you said a lot of untrue things about me, but you know what? I didn't comment on it because I didn't listen to you. I didn't listen to it. I don't care. So I'm not going to make a comment on it. It's unfair of you to make a comment when you didn't listen to the entire thing. So I basically don't care.
Well, you know, he was such a big part of wrestling for so long and
he's 2 years.
Well, whatever. He's very upset now and I wish he wasn't angry about anything and everything. I mean,
so do I.
I mean, you know, wanting you to get fired and you're a snake, and he's drawing awful paintings and selling them on eBay of you. And it's just, it's very weird that this is somebody that you and I just, what, a year and a half ago were in semi-regular communication with. And now just, he's decided to see the worst in everything. I don't know. Like, I didn't take what you were saying last week to mean that. I've never even heard that Vince Russo negotiated a contract ever. Like, it was so far out of left field. I understood, because I speak Bruce, that you were saying that anytime it was brought up, he would just, yeah, sort of being dismissive. And then somebody else had to put the pieces together, because that wasn't in his wheelhouse. His lane was to.
Correct.
And I'm not saying he would offer terms. I'm saying if it came up on the other side, he would dismiss it. I don't know. It's one of those deals where it's.
Well, that's what I meant. And yeah, you speak Bruce, and sometimes not everyone speaks Bruce.
Yeah. Well, listen, I hate that he's upset, and maybe he's just pulling a gimmick for downloads on his show. And if so, good for him. But it's like, you could email us or text us or call us or DM us, or you could draw paintings and sell them on eBay and tell everybody that they're liars and snakes, but oh, click this link and go buy it here. So whatever. Jeffrey Rose wants to know, why did Vince choose you to come to New York with him? He brought lots of territories over the days, and there were tons of employees for those. So why did he choose you?
Well, Eddie Gilbert had gone up and met with him in 1986. Yeah, had to be 86. And Eddie had asked if I was interested in going to New York. He gave my name to Vince, told Vince about me, and called, and we talked. And I mean, that's it. I don't know that there were that many people that wanted to go to New York that were qualified or capable, what have you. I actively sought the job out, and I actively wanted to go to New York and do whatever it took to succeed. So maybe that's why I interviewed, you know, I talked to the guy, I told him I wanted to go to work, and I wanted to be there and do what I had to do.
Let's talk about, Scott Steiner. This is a fascinating question we've never touched on from Broncello. Bruce, you told us the story once of wanting Scott Steiner to win the 1993 Royal Rumble. Had that actually happened, would there have been considerations for making him the guy to slam Yokozuna on the Intrepid?
By that time, no, you know, Scotty, they were already with the company at that point, right?
Yeah.
But they came. Yeah.
I guess the idea is, had you went with Steiner, could you have slid Luger out and slid Steiner in?
Well, had we gone with Steiner, Steiner would have been the guy just period. So, but again, Vince wasn't up for that and felt that we needed to build Scott and Rick and Scott were not looking to be split up at the time. They didn't want to do singles, so we didn't do it. It wasn't something that really could even be discussed.
All right. One last question before we wrap things up here. Francis wants to know, what's the one thing you think people don't know that they should know about Vince McMahon?
That he's human. And well, goddamn, let me think about that. Maybe he isn't, but no, really and truly that he's human and, just like everybody else, and has a very tough exterior that he puts out there, but he's, you know, the biggest thing is he is fair and he's human. I think a lot of people just look at him as a larger than life being and forgets that he's a human being sometimes.
Well, and, another human being that we talked about at the top of the show that we said we would circle back to is, our great close personal friend, Eric Bischoff. And of course you and he made all the headlines on Tuesday, and you said you would address it at the end of the show. What would you like to share with everyone?
Well, I'd like to say that I think that Eric Bischoff is, first of all, Eric is a friend of mine, and Eric is a good friend of mine that I love personally. I love him professionally, and I was sad for the news that came out this past week. on a professional level and a personal level. So, you know, I want to wish Eric the absolute best. Eric and Ari aren't, you know, oh my God, Eric's gone. I can never talk to him again. Absolutely not. And, you know, sometimes in business things happen for whatever reason. Sometimes you don't know the reasons and you have to move on. But I do believe that Eric Bischoff is one of the smartest guys I've ever met and worked with. I think he's one of the nicest guys, and he also is a human being. So when you sit there and you make comments through a keyboard or through your phone and it's a faceless, just random thing, remember that you're making comments about human beings, and you're making comments about real people that have families and real people that, yes, we're in the public eye, and I get that. And to a certain point, say and do whatever the hell it is you want to do. But also remember that it's real life and that we are human and that we do have families. And believe it or not, we have feelings. And I know that Eric will succeed, and Eric, you know, this is not, you know, it's like, he ain't dead. But I just want to publicly wish Eric Bischoff the absolute best in business, life, and everything else, because he's a good friend, and I'm proud and happy to say that he's my friend.
Yeah. Listen, I know that Eric, hasn't always been the most endearing person at times. He a lot of fans have bought into the character Eric Bischoff, but behind the scenes, I have always thought that you should treat someone how they treat you. And Bischoff has been nothing but fantastic to me and my family. And he's just not what you expect. But for whatever reason, a lot of fans villainize him and had a little fun at his expense this week. Do you think, you know, and obviously you don't have a crystal ball and you'd just be straight up guessing, but do you think at this point, Eric may have had his fill of wrestling? Like, as far as being involved in a company, obviously he enjoys the podcast and he enjoys live appearances, and he likes when, you know, we do live shows and things like that. But do you think, he may say, nah, I've had enough of that. I don't think I want to try that again. Or do you think he may pop up somewhere someday?
You never say never, you know, I mean, it's anything can happen, and I hope that whatever does happen that he's happy with it and he'll make a go of it. So
here's what I mean specifically. Sometimes I hear from old school guys who say, it's just in my blood. I just can't get away from it. It's like, even when you try to leave, like there's something that always pulls you back to wrestling. And for a lot of other old timers, it's really all they know, that they haven't found a way to sort of make their way outside of wrestling. Eric has had success outside of wrestling with some of his different businesses, and specifically with his television companies. So because he's had all these different facets of life, this may be easier for him to put down, unless it's just really, really in his blood. Do you think it's in his blood the way it's in yours?
I do think it's in his blood, but I also think Eric could walk away from it. And he has, he's built a successful production company and he's done that. So that's not out of the realm. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what the next chapter is in his life. And I was sad. And, again, it's, we're still friends and he's a great guy. And that's the real part. That's not, you know, somebody trying to be a dick, or I don't know. I just, it amazes me sometimes what people will say and do from a distance.
Well, we hope that you guys are enjoying the show here. We hope you'll listen to Eric's show this coming week. If you want to hear from Eric, he is probably going to make some sort of statement this coming Monday when we cover Scott Hall in WCW. Check out 83 Weeks anywhere you enjoy your podcast. And of course, tell your friends about Something to Wrestle, because we're doing something insane next week. I'm making Bruce watch Ultimate Warrior Hulk Hogan from Halloween Havoc 1998. Are you going to have a few cocktails before we do that? I mean, this feels like Chinese water torture or something like that.
Maybe, because I'll be in the new house and I'll be in the new studio, and yeah, I might just kick back and have a little fun.
Well, stay tuned next Friday and every Friday, because the show's not going away, right here on Something to Wrestle With, Bruce Pritchard.
Shaka Khan.
I'm glad you dropped that Pancho Villa shit.
Pancho Villa? Pancho Villa, are you asking me, man? Do I know Pancho Villa?
Yeah, we had lunch one time.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah. Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.